Ibrahim, during your address to the MEPs, you said that prison is a whole new world where you have to learn a new culture, a new way of living, and you said where every human right accorded to you is violated. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So one of the main reasons that really affected me in prison, of course, it's an honor to be here and for Lynn to bring me here to speak in front of the MEPs, because for me in prison that was such a absolutely reviving to hope when the resolution took place and they voted for me to be released unconditionally from Egyptian prisons. So I came back and to say thank you and to tell them about the Egyptian conditions in prison. But one of the main things that really shocked me in prison was how a doctor and a student or a simple farmer could all be, you know, really equal once they put that prison suit on and just live the prison life, because you have to be, you know, you're synced into this new life where you have to survive. Some people take the bad route of it, some people take the good route of it, some people stay the same of how they were. And, you know, it's a really shocking way of living to me as a 17-year-old to go into that and to try to understand it as a teenager. And I have to go by the system and obey the prison system, not the prison law. That's something totally different, because prisoners have a different system within themselves that they have to go by.
So I know you've talked about your time in prison now several times, but what was it like initially when you were only 17, you were a minor when you were arrested, when you were taken to Cairo and put into prison?
So of course, with coming from a democratic background in Ireland and we practice democracy, I never thought that I would actually be in prison for such a long time. And I thought it would, you know, I did nothing wrong and that the law literally, it goes by the people and says whatever the people want in a revolution that they will get if it's for the call of democracy. So I went down for that reason initially in Egypt, I took part in the protest in Egypt for that cause, but I was there for a family holiday because I have extended family in Egypt. So when the protests got taken place and my friends were killed, that's when I started to protest against the killing of people and the killing of innocent. And I was imprisoned as a 17-year-old and I thought I'd be out in no time because I'm a minor and I had my sisters who were imprisoned with me, Sumaya, Fatima and Umayma, who were also in prison. So I thought, okay, maybe it's a couple of days till they figure out the system where we have nothing against us, because it's just protests, it's a coup, it's a revolution, whatever you want to call it, but the system is down. So we're in there for a part time, but for me to be there for 4 years was really, really shocking for me.
And at what stage did you realize that your incarceration could be for a long time?
So we were presented at a judge after about 6 months was the first time we were presented in front of a judge. But the first trial straight away, he brought it back to the courts and he said that he doesn't want to hold the case anymore. And we were going back to the legal system and we stayed another 6 months in there. And that's when I started to say, okay, maybe I'm staying here for a longer time. I never, of course, lost hope, because there was a lot of the support I was getting from Ireland, from Lynn, from Dara Makin and Amnesty and Reprieve and the Irish people. But as a prisoner, you always have to have something to have your hope based on. Sometimes that breaks, but sometimes that, you know, can bring you up and it can bring you back down. So it depends on the day, it depends on the life you're living, it depends on the prison you go to, because I've been to 9 different prisons, so it differentiates from each prison.
And what would have been your living conditions most of the time when you were in prison?
So most of the time I visited for a huge part of my time was visiting wire, where it was wire and then 1 meter space and then wire between me and my family. And it was 5 minute visit, and that for me was very bad, because lack of communication is a break to hope with the family, because you make them feel better and they make you feel better, and then that's how you survive your week or 2 weeks of prison until your next visit. That's why a lot of people who don't visit in prison really, you know, tend to lose it mentally or tend to get very ill, that they don't have any family visiting them. So we tried to in the cell to try always make them feel that they're home, get them stuff that they need. But most of my prison time, it was 35 centimeters you sleep on. It was a packed cell, 30 to 35 people. I was isolated in a different prison with a lot of people, but politically by myself in Wadi Natroon 440. I was isolated there for a very long time. I woke up to this sound of screaming every day at 7 a.m. And so that was my alarm, basically. 7 a.m. was the noise of people screaming from beating, and the bars echoing off their back is what I can hear every day till now. Of course, there was no food, there was no drinking water for a very long time as well. We were forced to drink from the toilet. in Egypt, and I wrote about that in letters and how bad it was and the terrible conditions it was, because I always believed that I was brought there for a reason, to see these conditions, to bring it back to people and tell them that there is these conditions happening, that I am one of the people who was living a normal life in Ireland, and I went to these conditions by, you know, by whatever you want to call it, but I ended up in a cell, and I took part in a peaceful protest, ended up in a cell, and I had to bring these back to the values, to tell them that we are taking a lot of things for granted.
Were you physically tortured or physically beaten?
Yes, I was. So the norm in prison is to be slapped, kicked and beaten by bars. So usually if you meet a prisoner in Egypt, you don't ask them, did that happen to you? But I was beaten with a metal chain. I was laid on the ground, naked on the hot surface in the desert. And it was a very hot summer as well in Wadi Natroom 440. I was stood on by guards. I was tied to bars as if I was crucified. So there was a lot of that was going on. But there was people who were, you know, tortured, electrocuted in private parts. There were people who had chunks of meat taken off by them by scissors or knives. So there is a lot of, you know, very, very disturbing images still this day that I've seen.
And many times over the years, Ibrahim, it seemed like maybe you might be released. There were those mass trials, there were dates set, and then they would be cancelled. Did you give up hope at any stage? Or because you went on hunger strike as well at times during the middle of this, or did you think you would be released at the end of the day?
So I think I always, when I spoke a lot about how hunger strikes, and for one of the times I went on a hunger strike to get my cell painted, and some people, you know, made fun of that, but it's actually just, I was very sad that people made fun of it, not because of me, but it just shows that people don't yet understand the world of how someone could be so desperate to make their way of living better. And, you know, people who walk miles for water, we think that, you know, they don't do that, but they actually do that. That's how desperate people are when they're in need of something in a prison. So I was in need of a change. I was in need to see something happening. It was also a test for my first hunger strike. So I went on several hunger strikes. My last one was when my mother got got cancer, and I had to just be released. I was like, okay, there's no other condition where I'm gonna do a hunger strike other than now to be released. Of course, there was the Irish Parliament delegation that came to visit me in Egypt. So it was all the right time to do a hunger strike at that time. There is, of course, times where you lose hope, but you are human. Your hope is going to break. But if you don't have the support and, you know, the life I had behind me, my family, my sisters who are also supporting me, you know, like I said, Lynn, Reprieve, Amnesty, the Irish people, some of the Irish government, a lot of them who are really helping me. Of course, that as well just gives you the push of hope that every time it goes down. After 4 years, a lot of people were backing down that it's okay, it's taking too long. You're not going to really get released. And I think that's when I actually got released. And it was just beautiful for everyone, for me and for everyone who supported me.
I saw a recent tweet of yours where I think you were up the Dublin mountains and you said there were no filters or anything, but it was a beautiful scene, lovely, like typical Irish on a very nice day.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It's been almost 6 months since you got back home. What has it been like readjusting to normal life back in Ireland?
So one of the things I've really, you know, Peter Greste, who was, I was in prison with him, he's a journalist. He wrote me a letter once and he was talking about how he was speaking to a journalist, and a journalist said to him, how do you think Ibrahim will be when he gets back home? And Peter said, once Ibrahim gets back home, there is no normal for him. And I didn't understand that. I said, okay, I'll get back to life and life will move on. But it actually is, it's like that. There is no such thing as normal when you get back, and you can't live a normal life anymore. Whether some people think it's with media, it's not really. I'm not talking about the media perspective. I'm talking about the psychological perspective of it sticks with you. It just stays there. It doesn't leave. And I've got back to education. I tried to move on with my life. I'm helping with a lot of homeless people. There's also the Muslim Sisters of ERA who are out on the GPO helping the homeless people every Friday. I'm always helping out with them, helping any homeless in need, school, writing a book. So there's a lot of them doing at the moment, but psychologically it just always stays there.